Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms, gardens, and wild spaces of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me today, I am so excited to be speaking with Linda Cochran. She is a renowned gardener here in the Pacific Northwest, founder of an amazing garden on Bainbridge Island that she left several years ago and started a new garden in another part of Washington, Port Ludlow. And it sounds like that one is shaping up to be equally as amazing. So welcome, Linda.
Well, thank you.
It's so nice to have you here. And I want to mention at the very beginning of this show, this is airing on December 21st, 2021. It's winter solstice. Happy solstice. And Linda is going to be speaking with Ketzel Levine and a program for the Hoffman Center for the Arts in Manzanita. This is a Zoom presentation, and it's actually happening at 11 a.m. from 11 to 12:30 today, December 21st, 2021. And it's still possible to sign up for this. So in throughout this conversation that I'm having with Linda, if you are inspired and you want to listen to something so much more in depth with two gardeners who are just wonderful founts of knowledge, please head over to their website. It is hoffmanarts.org, and you'll find links to sign up for that presentation. And I highly encourage you to do that. So Linda, how long were you at your garden on Bainbridge Island?
On Bainbridge, I was there for 20 years.
That is a long time to be at one with a garden. And this was I think you called it Froggy Bottom. Garden.
Yes.
which sounds amazing. And it was just internationally renowned. I mean, you had people come from all over the world to see this garden. And then I've seen photographs. I never got to visit it in person, but it looked amazing. And then you chose to leave it. I mean, how hard was that as a decision?
Well, the house on Bainbridge was quite large. And we had 2.5 acres, probably an acre and a half of that was garden.
Wow.
And it got to be overwhelming to maintain the house and the garden, especially when there were visitors all the time. And I was the person to do it. I didn't have help except occasionally.
Wow.
So
an acre and a half, and you did that all yourself?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. I have so much respect for you.
So I didn't let my husband do anything.
Was he not a plant person? Sometimes that happens.
No.
So the choice to downscale was really just, it became too much. I mean, that's
right.
That happens as we get older, and it's a lot of work to maintain a garden at that level. So what made you choose Port Ludlow?
Well, we wanted to be within commuting distance of Seattle because my husband was still working.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's a long commute from Port Ludlow to Seattle, especially with a ferry ride, it's doable.
Yeah.
But it was about as far out as we could get and still be doable. And Port Ludlow is across the Hood Canal Bridge from the Kitsap Peninsula. So as soon as you cross the bridge, it's like you breathe a sigh of relief. Kind of like when you go to Hawaii and you get off the airplane, you breathe a sigh of relief. Well, it's that way when you go to across the Hood Canal Bridge. And we live in a housing development in Port Ludlow, which used to be a logging community back in the day. And now it's a housing development. Many logging communities turn into housing developments.
It's all that cleared there were land.
Houses. Right, exactly. Yeah.
And what was it like when you moved there? I mean, it's so amazing to go from a really well-developed and established garden to, not much of anything. It sounds like it was just pretty bare-bones landscaping when you moved in.
Yes. The house actually had been sitting there for 5 years unsold because it was built at the height of right before the crash.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some landscaping that the developer had put in, but it was minimal, not landscaping to my desires. So any landscaping that was there, I took out eventually. So nothing is here that was there to begin with.
Did you bring any plants with you?
I did.
It's hard to leave plants behind.
I brought a lot of things like of a bulbous nature.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bring that many plants that were in pots, and I certainly didn't bring any shrubs or anything like that. But certain things like Eucomus, pineapple lilies. I brought a lot of those and a few other things that were bulbs mainly.
Is the climate different there from Bainbridge Island? I mean, did you have to adjust to plants maybe that you had loved and grown for a long time and now they don't grow for you anymore? Or are there new opportunities?
Oh, anything on Bainbridge Island that would grow on Bainbridge grows here. But there are a few differences. It's a little cooler here in the summertime. When we were in the process of selling our house and we lived here, I crossed the Hood Canal Bridge every day from Bainbridge because I was still maintaining that garden to here. And there was usually a drop of about 10 degrees going over the bridge. So it's cooler in the summer. It's not cooler in the winter. It's pretty much the same in the winter. And we also get less rain because we're partially in the rain shadow of the Olympics. So we only get about 24 inches of rain. I think on Bainbridge it was around 35.
That's a significant difference. Has it made you change the selection of plants that you're working with?
Yeah, I think it's a totally different selection, not because of the lack of rain, but because the soil here is very sandy glacial till. Very, very sandy, very well drained. And we live sort of on our house backs onto a steep slope. So unlike the house on Bainbridge, which was in very clay, non-draining soil, the soil here is very well drained. And so it's suitable for plants that didn't do very well on Bainbridge.
So going from plants that can really tolerate wet to not, I mean, that's a very different family of plants. Have you met some new plant friends that you're excited about? I mean, are there things you recommend for that kind of situation?
Yes, because I've really gotten into native plants, and native from all over the Pacific Northwest, even from the dry side. So, and I try to grow every plant that I see that I think would make a good garden plant if I can find seeds for it. Often I can't, but I'm growing a lot of plants that I didn't even know existed when I had my Bainbridge garden.
So is this just from moving into native plants and getting introduced to that world? I mean, there's so many amazing natives in this region. It's phenomenal what a small amount we usually experience.
Yes, I think most people aren't aware of the variety of native plants we have and the beauty of many of them. And this was my thinking 20 years ago, you know, why native plants? I can go out in the woods and see them. But no, you can't, because many of them aren't easily seen unless you know exactly where to look. And there are so many, if you have to go out and about, which besides gardening, my hobby is to go out throughout the Pacific Northwest and photograph native plants.
So how are you are you collecting seed? Do you have sources? I mean, that's the challenge too, is where do you buy some of these plants? I think I've seen more interest in growing native plants and introducing natives into the gardens, but it can be very challenging to source plant material. So is that why you're doing more and more from seed yourself?
Yes, I grow a tremendous number from seed, and I have a list of probably 20 plants that I really want, that where seed is just not available. And it's not all plants that are from high elevation and not all plants from east of the mountains. There are some ones high on my list that are from the coast. So, and these are beautiful plants that are never grown even by native plant nurseries.
What do you think the reason for that is?
I think a lack of demand.
Mm.
And until recently, I mean, the demand for native plants has really skyrocketed recently.
So hopefully these things will start to catch up. I know there's a few small native plant growers and nurseries here on the North Oregon coast that are starting up. And you are starting to see more, especially more of the ornamental natives available, but in very small numbers, and you have to know where to look.
Yes. You can't get everything from one native plant nursery. You have to drive all over the whole Pacific Northwest to native plant nurseries to get what you want.
Which is exciting and a wonderful challenge. And so do you like to mix natives with non-natives, or do you find that you're just really going more towards pure natives?
I'm not a purist. And I find that because of our climate, which is a summer dry climate, natives tend to bloom early. and then they go dormant during the summer. Even on the coast, they do that. And so if you want things blooming late in the season, unless you want yellow flowers, because there are always yellow flowers natively blooming, then you have to go to non-natives. And what I try to do is have a complete season, I mean, a garden that looks good all the time, which requires a succession of plants throughout the season. And so some of those, especially late season plants, tend to be non-native.
But they work well together? You don't find them arguing with each other?
They do work well together, so far, anyway.
Well, and so how long have you been in this garden that you're at now?
It's almost 9 years now.
That's
so
a long time.
Time flies.
Yeah. is it getting to where you want it to be? I mean, I feel like gardens are always a work in progress, and there's always something changing. But do you feel like it's headed in a direction that you were envisioning?
And as I go along, I find that I've made mistakes early on, and I need to correct some of those mistakes. I'm getting to that point where I'm deciding what I want to take out that I shouldn't have put in the first place. Other areas are pretty full now.
Did you find that when you first moved there, did you just rush to start planting things? I know I feel like some gardeners are the kind of, they like to wait and not plant for a while and really observe the garden. And some people just like, you just start putting plants in the ground right away. Was that you or?
No, I learned from gardening for 20 years on Bainbridge not to be in a rush to plant. I took out things. I mean, everything that was here, I took out, and I did that sort of gradually. We live in a housing area that has a homeowners association, so I didn't want to shock anyone with what I was doing. And so nobody has complained. In fact, I get a lot of people saying how much they like the garden. But I didn't do things, you know, overnight. And I view gardening as a process anyway, an enjoyable process. And I don't like the idea of just in one fell swoop putting in a garden and leaving it that way. I don't think that's real gardening. That's cake decorating.
I could see that. Well, it's also, I mean, you're always meeting new plants and, you know, you need to find a place to put them in your garden, which might mean taking something out.
And that's true, especially with the natives that I'm growing. There are a number of them that I grow from seed, and so I have to acquire them that way. And some of them I have to find where the plant grows, then go back when it's in seed to collect the seed. So that is a long process for some of the natives. And some of them just take a while to establish in a garden.
Yeah, I found sometimes in starting native seeds, I mean, sometimes the germination process can be really long. And you might think, oh, this is just not going to ever germinate. And then suddenly a plant pops up, you know, maybe a year later. There's a patience involved.
Yes.
Which is exciting, too. I've definitely had flats that I've just set aside and thought, oh, they're all dead. And then come back a few months later and it's covered with plants.
Yeah.
So plants you're particularly enjoying growing right now? Are there things you're excited about?
Well, I guess my favorite and the one I'm known for growing and championing is the Castilleja, which is the paintbrush.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have a lot of those in my garden, and I love paintbrushes. You know, they're all over the Pacific North. They're all over the entire West, and they haven't been grown much in gardens, but I found they aren't that difficult to grow in a garden.
What do you like about them? I mean, what makes this your favorite plant? I mean, why are you drawn to it?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. The color of them, the fact that when you often see them, you see them in mass quantities, which I like. Up on Mount Rainier, where I go quite often, there are magenta paintbrushes, which are just gorgeous. And there are millions of them at places like Paradise. And then there's the scarlet paintbrushes, which are all over. They grow on the coast. They grow in the mountains. They grow everywhere. They're even purple paintbrushes, believe it or not. So.
Wow. Are they attractive to insects or birds? I mean, are those things that you find happening in your garden as well?
Yes, I have more of the scarlet paintbrushes than anything. And they are really loved by hummingbirds. Mm. And they're in bloom very early in the spring, and the same plant won't be in bloom the whole year, but they bloom, they take from one blooms one time, one blooms another time. So you'll have, if you have a kind of an ecosystem of scarlet paintbrushes in your garden, you'll have them in bloom from early spring to late fall.
That's encouraging. And I'm sure that makes your hummingbirds wildly happy.
They love it, yeah. Now, some paintbrushes are pollinated by insects, but the scarlet ones are pollinated by hummingbirds.
Have you noticed in your garden, so if you went from pretty much bare bones, you took everything out, and now you've been adding, have you been noticing an insect diversity showing up? Or like that response from the insects and the birds?
Yes, and it seemed like this was a desert for insects and birds when we first moved in, because the developer had taken out all the vegetation pretty much where the houses are. And there was probably the use of a lot of pesticides and herbicides. And I don't use any of those things. And I've noticed, and I had a neighbor who also was in tune to my way of thinking. So we noticed how many more insects, how many more bees there are, how many more birds there are as a result of the garden.
It's so exciting to see that diversity when it starts to come back. Those of you listening, if you're just joining us today on In Season, I'm speaking with Linda Cochran. She is a renowned gardener here in the Pacific Northwest. And for those of you who want to hear more from Linda, today, December 21st, 2021, winter solstice, she's going to be speaking with Ketzel Levine at the Hoffman Center of the Arts. It's a Zoom presentation, and you can go to hoffmanarts.org and find out about that to sign up for it and register. It's going to be from 11 to 12:30 today, December 21st, which sounds so exciting. I mean, to have the two of you conversing about gardens and everything that you're talking about is so fascinating. I think, do you find that people are becoming more adventurous in their gardens as you're out and about? I mean, in your development, in this development that you live in, is yours that kind of like one strange garden where all the weird plants are and everyone else has the conventional landscaping? Or do you think you're starting to influence your neighbors in maybe some of their plant selection?
In a small way.
I mean, I think that's so exciting. I have a sister who lives in Maryland, and she lives in one of those housing developments where it's like, you know, all three houses look the same, and it's all like just an enormous lawn with some shrubs up by the house. But she has this crazy garden with no lawn. It's amazing native plants and all kinds of stuff. And it's so striking when you drive past. It's like same, 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 same. Whoa. And I imagine that your garden may be a bit like that.
Yeah, I have people who walk by my house all the time, and they say how much they like it and how much they like the ever-changing palette of flowers in the garden, which you don't see in other gardens in Port Ludlow.
Yeah, but it's not translating necessarily into other people adopting it.
Well, I give away plants to people. If they express an interest in something, I give them some plants. I haven't seen any major changes, but we live in a fairly new development, and who knows? Well, I mean, some people have a mindset that won't allow for this type of gardening.
Yeah. And sometimes it just takes time for people to meet new plants and become comfortable with them. And just seeing it over and over again. I can imagine the display that happens is so striking. Do you find with the smaller garden, is it easier to take care of? Are you finding it easier? Or are you just starting to complicate things and make work for yourself?
I think it's easier, yeah.
Because I find that sometimes, like when we love gardening, you know, we just keep doing it, and then you can just keep adding more and more, and you know, trying to simplify. I often, when I try to simplify my farm, I end up wildly complicating things.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's always hard to say no to a new plant.
It is.
So do you find, because you are in a much drier climate than what you were in before, are you growing things like with an idea for sort of drought tolerance or low water, or do you have to irrigate your garden a lot?
Well, there's a sprinkler system that came with our house, but there's one major area of the garden that has no sprinklers to it. And that area is very, very dry in the summertime. I found that plants that are touted as drought tolerant aren't drought tolerant. There are degrees of drought tolerance, and you have to be very drought tolerant to live in that part of the garden. And yes, I am interested in plants that are drought tolerant.
Are you finding ones that can live in that area?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not an impossibility. It's just the right
plant.
When
you travel around the Pacific Northwest, you go to areas that are much drier than here, and they have plants that grow there. So if they can grow there, they can grow here.
And you find, I wonder about plants, you know, growing maybe in eastern Washington or eastern Oregon, do they translate to your garden because you're a very different climate? Or is it just, you know, trial and error? Some will
they
and
do.
Some won't.
I've found that almost always they will translate, yeah. Now, if I lived in a climate like yours with the amount of rain that you have, they may not, but mm-hmm. they do translate here. And of course, if I lived in Sequim, which we're not too far from Sequim, they get 14 inches of rain a year, so they certainly would translate there.
I don't know that they would translate here. We get so much rainfall.
Right.
Especially this year. It's been an incredibly wet season, so I feel like things are so soggy. I can't imagine a drought time. The drought is not our problem right now. I think I think some people are so intimidated sometimes starting over again or starting in a blank garden. Do you visualize things first? Do you draw things out, or do you just start moving plants around and see how they go? And I'm just curious about your design process.
Well, I don't like to put things on paper. I have a look that I want. And that look is based for this garden on what I've seen in nature. So I will plant things that go with the look and see how they do. And if they do well, then I might plant more of them. Or if they seed, then that's always good because I rely on self-sowers a lot. And as the garden evolves, I think, well, maybe I need more of this and more of that in this particular area. And so I add something, or in some cases, take it away.
So it's almost like an answer, a call and response between you and the garden, and you try something and see how it does and keep that conversation going. Have you ever had the experience of introducing a plant that maybe you haven't grown before and then having it maybe reseed a little bit too much? Sometimes that can be sort of scary, where there's this great plant and you think, oh, you know, it's beautiful. And then I always worry, have I just become the vector for the next massive invasive plant?
Yes, I have tales of that. Verbena bonariensis is one of those plants, and it came to my garden I didn't deliberately introduce it. It came from my old garden in a pot of other things, and I've been trying to get rid of it now for 7 or 8 years. I pull up all the seedlings, and finally I just gave up. I can't get rid
of it.
It's
just there.
So it's there.
Yeah, that can be so challenging. Some plants are so persistent, and I admire their tenacity, but it's also a little scary.
It is, yeah.
But fortunately, it's beautiful.
And there are native plants that sometimes do that. So not that they're considered evil for doing that, but they do that in a garden so they can take over a garden.
Do you find, I mean, sometimes growing a native plant, if you see it out in nature, you know, when it's in maybe a more harsh environment, it maybe looks a certain way or grows to a certain size. But when you put it in kind of a more pampered environment in a garden, do you find plants respond differently or look different from what you're expecting?
I think they would, except that I'm not trying to, I don't, unlike in my old garden, I don't amend the soil with compost. And I try to keep it as lean as possible. I've read quite a bit about how to establish meadow style gardens, and you want your soil lean. You should forget everything you ever learned in Master Gardeners if you ever took a Master Gardener course.
Wow, that's a big change. So I'm assuming you don't add lime to your garden. You don't do any of that kind of amending.
No.
Which actually sounds kind of great. A lot less work, a lot less hauling compost and...
And all the stuff that I have read says that you get a more diverse garden with more species if you have a very lean soil. In some cases, no soil at all.
And that increases the diversity.
Right, because otherwise, if you have a very rich, moist soil, one or two species will take over and take the whole place over, and they'll shade out everything else.
Huh.
So those climates that are Mediterranean that have very lean soil usually have a higher biodiversity.
That I did not know. That's fascinating. That's good to think about. And that's a very, you're right, it's a very different way of thinking about gardens. And certainly from, you know, I know how master gardeners approach things, but how most gardeners and most garden books, you know, it's all about amending your soil and adding and nutrients and all of that. And that is just such a really fascinating way to go about looking at things. And a great way to kind of scale down how much labor you're having to put into your garden. That's fascinating.
Right. I mean, there are advantages of mulching your garden, namely yeah. keeping weeds down. But on the other hand, if you want self-sowers, you don't want to do that. So,
yeah. Oh, that's, it just sounds, it's like such an amazing journey that you're on in this garden. And are you enjoying it? Do you feel inspired still?
Yeah, I feel like it's a whole different way of gardening, and I have a whole new plant palette from what I had before. And I find it really enjoyable to go out and explore and find plants that haven't been in cultivation and to try to get them into cultivation. My main proselytizing I've been doing now is for castilleias, because people have always thought they're not ungrowable, but they are growable and they are beautiful in a garden. So it's kind of exciting to do that and to grow them from seed.
Are you talking to nurseries and trying to convince them to start propagating or selling them as well?
Well, I have nursery people that I'm friends with on social media, and I know that they are doing this more and more. So yeah, I think the nurseries are doing it more and more.
That's how those things happen, and plants become more available to a wider audience. And you know, pretty soon all of us will be able to look for those plants and introduce them into our gardens in the right place, and maybe
right.
with less well-amended soil. Melinda, it is so fascinating to hear your stories, and it's really inspiring too to think about approaching gardening in such a different way. Especially during this dark time of year, I feel like it's just fun to imagine and think about different things. So I thank you so much for having this conversation with me and being so inspiring. And so tell us a little bit about, so tomorrow, well, today, this is airing on the 21st, you're having a conversation with Ketzel Levine, and it's going to be a winter solstice conversation talking about plants in the new year. And
yeah, I'll have lots of pictures.
Oh, that'll be
so
really
I do a lot of photography, so...
So if you want to join this conversation and hear this conversation between two amazing gardeners, again, go to the Hoffman Center for the Arts in Manzanita. It's hoffmanarts.org. And check out their horticulture arts program. It's with Linda Cochran and Ketzel Levine, a conversation with photography by Linda. It sounds beautiful and inspiring. And pictures of this garden that you're talking about, yeah?
Right.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be so cool. Linda, thank you so much.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it was wonderful to talk to you. I've been talking with Linda Cochran, a renowned Pacific Northwest gardener. And thanks for joining us on KMUN. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much.
Okay.
That was so perfect. I have to assume you have a dog there.
Yes, chances are.